This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's talk about why the communists are freaking out about this U.S. aid stuff. Let's talk to Ali Beth Stuckey, John Carney about tariffs, Josh Hammer about the Trump Hotel in Gaza, all that and more coming up on I'm Right. Okay, I'm back. A little flu bug take me down for a couple days, so I'm finally here, and let's discuss something. In fact, let's have a big discussion tonight about communist activism. Who funds it? Who organizes it? How does it work? Because what we're seeing right now, what's been a hot topic for the last 48, 72 hours, I know because I've been laying in bed dying, is all this USAID stuff. USAID. This government organization that takes in our money and hands it out to whoever they want across the globe. Now, I want you to pause for a moment, and I want you to think about what the last 2 weeks has been. It's been 2 weeks. Trump's been president. Think about, just pause for a moment and think about all the things he's done. Remember that fat stack of executive orders first day, January 6th pardons and DEI this and this and that. All kinds of things have been done in the first 2 weeks. Now, let me ask you this, now that you're thinking about that. How many things has Trump done that has prompted a reaction from Chuck Schumer like this?
We cannot allow Elon Musk and a small group of people to secretly, behind closed doors, take away our privacy, take away our dollars, take away everything we have. We are going to fight this fight. I am going to stand with you in this fight. And we will win.
We will win.
We will win. We will win. We will win. We will win. We won't rest. We won't rest. We won't rest. We won't rest.
A little bit cringy, but you get what I'm saying. Why? That wasn't just Chuck Schumer. I could sit here for an hour and play for you all the most powerful Democrats in the country rallying, protesting. Oh my gosh, USAID, we have to have USAID. Geez, don't take away our USAID. Ah! Why the freak out? It's been 2 weeks. It's been all kinds of things Trump has done. Why is it the USAID? I mean, gosh, they're out there on the microphone sounding like the Democrats of a couple years ago. We got taken to the streets.
Shut down the Senate! We are at war!
Agitating! We will see you in the courts, in Congress, in the streets. Elon Musk is a Nazi nepo baby.
We are going to be in your face, we are going to be on your asses, and we are going to make sure... We're going to make sure you understand what democracy looks like. This ain't it. So let me tell you something, Mr. Trump. You gonna learn a few lessons from us. And I'm gonna be the first one. You and your little friend off of Twitter. Y'all about to find out, all right?
Better recognize why. All these things have been done. Why? Okay, so let's have a talk, shall we? Just a little analogy before we move on and talk to Josh Hammer and Ali Beth Stuckey and other things. I want you to picture this. It's the Great Depression, okay? It's the Great Depression. And you've read books, maybe you've watched movies about how guys would line up in the morning trying to just get some work that day. Line up, you go down to the dock, you line up, and you try to get picked that day. And there's a guy always. There's a guy sitting there who works for the company, And it's his job to pick the people. Hey, you showed up early, I'll pick you. Hey, I'll pick you. So he's the one who gets to pick, who gets to work all day. And sometimes that same guy who was picking, hey, you, you can work. Sometimes that same guy at the end of the day, he's the one who hands out the cash from that day. They used to pay people daily during the Depression. People had to eat. Hey, Bob, here you go. Here's your money, and here's your money. You with me? Okay. So you are that guy. The guy who gets to pick people, the guy who gets to pay people. And it's been this way for years. No matter what the dock company was doing, no matter who was managing it, no matter who was owning it, no matter what they were doing, shipping, unloading, it didn't matter at all. You were the guy holding on to that choke point of power. And with that choke point of power over several years, what could you do with it? It didn't matter what the manager screamed, what the owner screamed. Pick your friends. Hey, Bob, come on in. Hey, Jimmy, my cousin. Come on, Jimmy, I'll get you in. Because you're the one who gets to choose. Didn't matter what the management decided, you're the one who gets to choose. And on the way out the door, you have the bag full of money. Maybe cousin Jimmy only earned $50 that day. And because he's cousin Jimmy, maybe give you a little bit of it back. Maybe you give him 100. You have the money. Whatever the rules are, whatever the laws are, that's someone else's problem. You have the money, you see. And then I want you to imagine this. After years of this total control, who comes in, who leaves, where the money goes, the manager shows up and he introduces you to someone who's going to do your job, just like you. In fact, he's going to take over half the time. How offended would you feel? How threatened would you feel? How angry would you feel? What you're seeing right now, the collective freak out from Democrats across the United States of America at Donald Trump going after U.S. aid. One, it's the very tip of the iceberg, meaning there is this massive, massive iceberg where you, the taxpayer at the federal, state, and local level, are funding the communist activism you see in the streets. And what Democrats are looking at right now is for the first time in my adult life, in my 43 years on this planet, they're looking at finally a GOP administration that doesn't just issue orders, executive order here, and well, this is the law, and then sits back watching these filthy communists kneecap them from the inside. No. Those days are over. Now, the GOP has finally figured out that the communist activists who have occupied positions of power in our government, well over 90% Democrat, they have been making all the decisions on behalf of the company, no matter who gets elected, and they've been doing this for decades. For decades. Didn't matter, Republican, Democrat, didn't matter. The various communists and various agencies across the federal government and your state government, across the federal government, they've simply decided, well, I don't care if Donald Trump wins, I don't care if Joe Biden wins, I don't care if... I have communist activism to do, and nothing will stop me. You see, I control the paychecks. I control who comes in, who's going to get that government contract. I control what money goes out, where that money goes. Nobody will ever stop me. No one has ever even taken an interest in stopping me. And after decades and decades and decades of this, what Democrats have done very sharply, I should point out, although it's corrupt, is they've figured out a system that can domestically and internationally take your money from you, take taxpayer money, and hand it out to their friends, funding Democrat activism. You and I have had this talk a million times on the show, that the Democrat activism you see in the streets, the protesting, the rioting, but it doesn't matter whether it's a rally on Capitol Hill or they're burning down Foot Locker, 99.9% of the communist activism you see in the streets is funded and organized. It's not organic. It's not people just mad about St. George Floyd. It's funded. It's organized. Now, you know that because we've talked about it many times on the show, but what you may not know and what might make you uncomfortable is how much of that communist activism on our streets and foreign soil is organized and funded by you, by the taxpayer, because years of neglect from the voter has left Democrats in charge of everything, handing out those envelopes of money and deciding who gets that next contract. An ugly, corrupt, criminal system that is finally getting exposed. And that's why you didn't see a collective communist freak out when Donald Trump was signing executive orders, getting rid of DEI here, or doing this to the drug cartels there. But he walks into USAID and starts eliminating these positions. He starts investigating exactly what they've been doing with the money, and immediately it's time to take it to the streets. You better recognize. That's why they freaked out, because the actual power they have, the power of hoovering up your money, that is what's being threatened. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Look, we fund our enemies. We do. We've done it forever. Who do you have a cell phone with? You have AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile. Look, this doesn't just apply to the government. We fund our enemies. If you have AT&T, T-Mobile, you fund your enemy. I have Pure Talk. I don't do that. Pure Talk is the patriotic cell phone company. They're on the same 5G network, so you're not losing coverage or anything like that. They are patriotic. They don't fund Black Lives Matter. They don't fund Planned Parenthood. They don't take your money and use it against you and your values. Pure Talk, their CEO fought for this country in Vietnam. I have an amazing cell phone company with the same coverage you do. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
The U.S. will take over the Gaza Strip, and we will do a job with it, too. We'll own it and be responsible for dismantling all of the dangerous unexploded bombs and other weapons on the site, level the site and get rid of the destroyed buildings, level it out, create an economic development that will supply unlimited numbers of jobs and housing for the people of the area. Do a real job, do something different. Just can't go back. If you go back, it's going to end up the same way it has for 100 years.
Okay. What do we think about it? Let's talk to Josh Hammer about this next. Joining me now, Josh Hammer, host of the book America on Trial, also wrote a book about this area, Israel and Civilization. Okay, Josh, at this point in time, with all the winning from the Trump administration, I am very hesitant to lob any criticisms or even really concerns out there. I've been so happy with this 2 weeks, but I have concerns, to put it mildly. The people of Gaza are not dying for new job opportunities. They're just dying for Allah.
Jesse, that's very well put, actually. Look, this was not on anyone's bingo card, I think would be a polite way of saying it. It was definitely not on my bingo card. I mean, he was standing there next to Benjamin Netanyahu. I'm reasonably certain that this was not on Benjamin Netanyahu's bingo card either. I mean, this is not a thing that's been discussed. I mean, there's been a lot of conversations since October 7th. There's been a lot of conversations going back much further than October 7th as to what will have to happen in Gaza in the long term, assuming correctly that Hamas cannot stay in power. But the idea that the United States would come in and basically build the Trump Hotel Khan Yunis or the Trump Resort in Rafah, you know, this was not something that anyone was thinking about. So I don't know is the honest answer. I don't know exactly what to think of this until we hear more in the way of detail. What I know for sure, Jesse, is that the United States should definitely not go in there unless and until the actual Arabs there are out. So it seems to me like what Donald Trump is saying here when it comes to Gaza, this is all basically contingent on his related proposal slash his mandate, it seems, to Egypt and Jordan that they take in the Arabs there in Gaza. So from that perspective, I think it actually could work out well. I think the broader point here, Jesse, is that Donald Trump is a disruptor. He is someone who takes old, outmoded shibboleths. He takes old orthodoxies that have become stale to the extent that they were ever viable in the first place, and he likes to shatter it. That's how we got the Abraham Accords peace deal back in 2020. For decades and decades, the two-state solution cartel, the foreign policy establishment from both sides of the aisle in Washington, D.C., said, oh, the only way that Israel is ever going to get normal relations with any more Arab countries is to give the Palestinians a state. And Trump and Netanyahu tag-teamed team the first time around that basically said, screw that. We're actually going to go outside in. Forget the Palestinians for a second here. Let's strengthen Israel. Let's strengthen UAE, Bahrain, and so forth there. We'll get this anti-Iran alliance, and then maybe the Palestinians will come begging for scraps at the table. So it's that kind of creative outside-the-box thinking that I think is going on here. I would be lying if I said to you that I see exactly where this is going, because I don't. But I guess I will say this. I mean, Trump is right insofar as Gaza is 25 miles of beautiful Mediterranean Sea beachfront property. It does have enormous potential. When Israel withdrew there in 2005, they said that the Arabs had the potential to turn it into a Singapore on the Mediterranean. That was the popular phrase at the time. We see what they did with it. They turned it into an Islamist terrorist bastion, obviously. But who am I to doubt Donald Trump at this point there? I want to see where this is going. I'm not sure how serious it is, but I have decently high hopes, I guess.
Yeah, I guess we shall see. All right, we're moving on. There's so much I have to tackle with you. Iran famously wants to kill Donald Trump. They've wanted to kill him for quite some time. Trump dropped this little nugget to a reporter. Here he was.
It's Iran and their proxies who have threatened to retaliate against you and your team by killing you guys for taking out Soleimani.
Well, they haven't done that. And that would be a terrible thing for them to do. Not because of me. If they did that, they would be obliterated. That'd be the end. I've left instructions. If they do it, they get obliterated. There won't be anything left.
Josh, what does that mean?
You know, Jesse, yet again, I kind of throw my hands up and I say I'm not entirely sure what the big guy has exactly in mind here. It seems to me like he's saying that if you succeed in taking me out, and we know for a fact that Iran has been trying for a long time to take out Donald Trump. They've been trying to take out a lot of people from his first administration as well in response to the assassination of Qasem Soleimani at the Baghdad, Iraq airport in 2020. So it seems like he's saying that if God forbid you are successful, I have put instructions in place to my successor, which I guess would be J.D. Vance, to go ahead and nuke your country to high hell. I mean, it seems to me like that is actually what he is saying there. Obviously, God willing, this never happens. God willing, the Iranian regime will not be successful in any of its assassination attempts extraterritorially, let alone against someone like Donald Trump there. So I hate that we're even having this conversation in the first place there, but it seems like Trump basically is not going to brook any nonsense when it comes to the Iranian regime. And certainly he and Netanyahu are on the same page there, that's for sure.
Josh, where is Iran right now, meaning the mullahs? Well, how is their hold on power? I know Joe Biden being in office kind of gave them a thread to hang on to. Trump being in office, not so much. So where does Iran go from here?
Well, they're in a tough spot. Iran was obviously rooting for the Biden regime, the Biden-Harris regime, to win this election. They were clearly rooting for the Democratic Party. I mean, ever since Barack Obama came into power in 2008, the Democratic Party has been obsessed with realigning American Middle East interests towards Iran, towards Qatar, towards the Muslim Brotherhood, away from our traditional allies like Egypt, Saudi Arabia, UAE, Egypt, and so forth there. And tragically, in many ways, they've actually been successful, but they've not been wholly successful. You know, I mentioned the Abraham Accords earlier. The Abraham Accords were a major anti-Iran alliance that came into being there. I think at this point, the Iranian regime is hurting. They've been having pretty bad inflation recently there. At this point, the best thing that the United States can do is to put back into place the crippling sanctions that were part of the maximum pressure campaign. They called it the first time around. Donald Trump just did that yesterday. He signed into law some of the harshest sanctions that any president has put on a foreign country in recent memory. So more of that, please. I think that is probably basically what we need to do. I certainly don't think any kind of bombs should start flying anytime soon or anything like that. But crippling sanctions, I think, would be a nice start. Make that regime heard, and God willing, the people will rise up and topple them.
Josh, USAID has been all over the news for a few days. And wow, the Democrat reaction to it has been quite revealing. Here's a bit of it.
We talked about Trump wanting to be a dictator on day one, and here we are. This is what the beginning of dictatorship looks like.
Elon Musk, you didn't create USAID. The United States Congress did for the American people. And just like Elon Musk did not create USAID, he doesn't have the power to destroy it. And who's going to stop him? We are. We're going to stop him.
This is a constitutional crisis that we are in today. Let's call it what it is. The people get to decide how we defend the United States of America. The people get to decide how their taxpayer money is spent. Elon Musk does not get to decide.
We also know this is just the beginning. If DOGE attacks USAID today, then you can be sure they'll move on to another target tomorrow. Who knows? Maybe it'll be the Postal Service or the IRS or even the Social Security Administration. They could be next. Or maybe our national security agencies.
Sorry, I just had to laugh when I heard him complain that maybe we'll go after the IRS. That's one. Two, Josh, it's interesting. In 2 weeks, Donald Trump's administration has attacked many, 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 many things from the previous administration, from previous administrations, but nothing has prompted the kind of reaction we got from USAID. Why is that, Josh?
Yeah, you know, Jesse, I think we're both just waiting to hear what Chuck Schumer is aroused about today. You know, that was a pretty funny Freudian slip recently, wasn't it? No, but I mean, listening to Chuck Schumer talk about how, God forbid, we actually go after the IRS, that kind of reminds me of this left-wing media report that I was reading the other day about Donald Trump and Elon Musk going after USAID, where they basically said, oh, they actually might have less money to fund for LGBT rights overseas and for DEI initiatives. And like, I'm reading this article and I'm like, you're talking about this like it's a bad thing. I mean, we're just not on the same page here. You know, after the 2024 election, you had a lot of more sober centrist Democrats, people like John Fetterman in Pennsylvania, people like Jimmy Carville, the old Raging Cajun down in Louisiana, people like that, who said, you know what, this party really needs to give up on just calling everything a constitutional crisis, on calling Donald Trump a fascist dictator day in and day out, and just getting back to basic politics, economic policy, bread and butter, blue collar, working class stuff, all the above. And now here we are, less than 3 weeks into Donald Trump's second term, and Jesse, they've learned nothing. They've learned literally nothing whatsoever. If USAID, an organization that last I checked was giving over $500 million to fund ESG initiatives, environmental social governance, basically DEI for investing, they were funding that in Africa. They were funding DEI in Burma to the tune of like $40 million, I think. If you guys are freaking out about this, I mean, I can't wait to see the reaction when Donald Trump and Elon Musk start to burn down the United States Department of Education there. I mean, they are going to be in the streets rioting, and I'm just going to sit back at my desk here and kick my feet in the table and have a nice little whiskey and just enjoy the ride, my friend.
It is enjoyable. Josh, see you, brother. Come back soon. All right. Let's talk to Ali Best Stuckey next. Ali Best Stuckey's on the forefront, has been on the forefront of cultural issues for a long time. She has a lot of things to say about what's happening right now. Very interesting stuff. Before we get to Ali, let's get to this. You know what's been my saving grace as I've been sicky poo for the last couple days? Some dream powder from Beam. You just want to sleep. That's all you want to do is sleep. And so when I want to sleep, I go have a cup of hot chocolate. But my hot chocolate is special, you see. It's dream powder in there. When I want to sleep, I take a little cup of milk, warm it up in the microwave, and then I just pour a little scoop of dream powder in there, and it's got natural things in it like melatonin. I mix it all up and sip on this delicious cup of hot chocolate, and I just sleep like a little baby. And man, what a difference it makes in your whole life when you sleep all the time. You want that? How about up to 40% off? shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back. Okay, so let's talk about culture war things, because these things didn't suddenly become unimportant just because we're getting some victories and running the filthy commies out of the government. They're as important now as ever. What kind of culture are we? What kind of culture do we want to be? And so Trump, he signs an executive order banning men from women's sports. Pam Bondi sworn in today. Hey, Pam, go enforce it. All this is good. But I hate to be old Jesse, old cynic. I have a couple complaints. One, why are we still pretending that the whole tranny thing is real anyway? It's not real. It's damaging even when they're not beating up women in volleyball. That's one. And two, Why did we need the president to come in and handle that? What if we'd lost the election? Why didn't the American people reject this stuff outright? Joining me now, Ali Beth Stuckey, author of the book Toxic Empathy. Okay, Ali, I'm happy. I'm assuming you're happy. I don't want to obviously make assumptions about your mental state, but I'm assuming you're pretty pleased. But I do have questions and concerns.
Yeah, I think that you raise a really good point, maybe a little bit of a pessimistic point. I hate how you're bringing us down as we're trying to ride this high of victory, but you're right. I mean, dads should have been the one signing their own executive orders and saying, no, my daughter is not going to play volleyball against this dude that asked her to homecoming 2 years ago. Like, that's not happening. We are not going to allow these boys to go into our women's locker rooms or else there's going to be a really big problem. That's a good point. It should not have been the president of the United States. We're not even talking politicians on a local level, but the president of the United States having to say, hey, stop sending your men into girls' locker rooms. We're not going to tolerate it. That is a really sad indication of where we are, especially where Christians are, because I think Christians are some of the most cowardly people on this subject.
Yeah, and in fact, you just walked right into my next question. I've been thinking about this. Where was the church in all this? Now, I know this is something that you talk about extensively, and I'm glad you do, and it's certainly not every church in the country, but why was there not a unified, bold Christian voice against not just the tranny and women's sports stuff, all the demonic cultural filth that has been pushed on this country, especially in the last 5 to 10 years? I realize some churches have pushed back. It's been the furthest thing from universal, and it hadn't been that loud.
No, you're right. And even those who consider themselves conservative Christians, obviously we expect that, like, Anglican bishop, whatever her name is, who, you know, preached about illegal immigration and stuff to Trump and Vance to be on the side of the gender nonsense. But, you know, pastors in Texas and Tennessee and Kentucky who claim to believe in the authority of Scripture only speak up about politics when they can lament, you know, the death of George Floyd or join in on, you know, anti-deportation protests. Those people are the problem. The mushy middle, the cowardly evangelicals who allow progressive social media algorithms to dictate their compassion and outrage, who are now speaking up so courageously against deportations, but had nothing to say when the Biden administration literally took away school lunches from poor public schools because they weren't allowing boys into girls' bathrooms per the rewrite of the Title IX under the Biden admin. Most Christians had nothing to say about that. It's because they want to be liked. It's because they just, like Adam and Eve, want to be like God. I mean, they want to have the power to be the arbiter of right and wrong, and they want to escape the consequences of sin, all of that. There's so many different reasons for it, but a lot of it probably is just cowardice and wanting to be liked by the world.
Ali, I'm glad you brought up the charity portion, the charity, I should use that air fingers quote on that, the charity portion of open borders, because it's starting to get exposed as the Trump administration digs through these NGOs. How many Christian/Catholic charities are out there that are really just set up to violate the sovereignty and laws of the United States of America? And it's really making all of us look bad, to be honest with you. I can't tell you how many emails that I get from people who are just, these freaking Catholics are screwing everything up. It's really awful. How did the church get to a place where they're doing this crap?
Oh my goodness. Well, I do think there are so many different aspects of it. Some of it is just like the love of money. And we read that the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And we see that the USAID is funding such a large portion of organizations like World Relief, Catholic Charities, even Jewish charities. They are lining their pocket. They are getting paid to be a part of the trafficking process of illegal aliens and children even across the border. So part of it is just plain old as time corruption. And then another part of it is that toxic empathy, which tells you that in order to be a good person, you have to be progressive, you have to be permissive, you have to affirm sin, you have to validate lies, you have to support destructive policies, because it makes this particular purported victim feel better. And so it's just another form of deception, but that toxic empathy piece, I think, is how that deception is manifesting itself in the church today.
Let's talk about RFK Jr., because word is, surprisingly, he's going to get through. Got through committee, he's going to get through. And what does this mean for America's health? I know my wife, if you get her wound up about this, you better have about 10 hours to set aside with all the crap we have in our food and everything else as I'm eating a quarter pounder with cheese. What does this mean for the rest of the country?
Yeah, you know, as a pro-lifer, I've had my concerns about RFK. There are plenty of really important things that we disagree on. He has been, at least in this process, said that he is going to champion whatever policies the Trump administration wants him to champion, and that's a good thing. But when we're looking at accountability for doctors and transparency for pharmaceutical companies, the FDA, as you said, what's in our food, what's in our vaccines, what's in our medications, the direct-to-consumer advertisements from the pharmaceutical companies, all of that is corrupt and has led to worse health outcomes in the United States. And I think that he is going to be extremely successful in holding these for-profit companies accountable. And I think that's a good thing. And I mean, we saw the danger of the FDA and the CDC during COVID, and God forbid there's another so-called pandemic that comes along. I would be very confident with RFK at the helm.
Yeah, well, we did so well during the last pandemic. Okay, so you did some digging on your show about USAID. And obviously that's been in the news hot and heavy for about 48 hours because the communists are freaking out about it. What did you find?
Yes, I found that we are funding with our tax dollars workplace DEI programs in Serbia, that we are also funding racial equity musicals in Ireland, that we have set up trans services, whatever that means, in Colombia. And so all across the world, we are making sure that people in poor countries bow down to progressive ideology. I found something that I already know, that you already know, that actually progressives love colonialism. They love imperialism. They love going into poor countries and telling them that they have to assimilate to American progressive culture. As long as colonialism and imperialism means that they get to push sexual degeneracy, they are good with it. And that's what they're doing in Uganda. That's what they're doing in the Congo. That's what they're doing in South America. If you do not abide by the principles of LGBTQ, whatever, then you get your money taken away. That's what the USAID has existed for.
Ali, I don't think people really understand and accept how much of the filthy communist activism, including all the LGBTQ Air Force stuff, is funded by our taxpayer dollars. They don't realize, they don't want to talk about how long Democrats have cemented this system in place where you and me get to fund all this crap.
No, I don't think they know. And honestly, I did not know the extent of it. And the USAID, they're not just sending our money to these countries to do these horrible things, but I mean, our money is also being laundered through these firms in DC that say that they represent the humanitarian needs of a place like Haiti, but our tax dollars are mostly staying in those firms and organizations. They're not even going to Haiti. And those firms and organizations are all arms of the Democrat Party. And so our tax dollars, in a variety of ways, are actually funding the campaigns of the people who hate us and are working against us and American interests. And I hadn't really thought about the extent of that until I started digging in to this story. And I know a lot of people like you have been talking about that for a long time, but to most Americans, like, this is all very revelatory.
Ali, appreciate you. Come back soon. Oh, we have so much more. You want to talk about some tariffs? Let's do that next. Okay, so let's talk about tariffs, shall we? In fact, let's talk about the economy in general. Donald Trump is a very different Republican than the type we've had. Maybe he's your type, maybe he's not. I'm talking about economically, but he's much more of a Teddy Roosevelt type. He's not something new. We've never seen this before. Oh, please. Parties change all the time. Donald Trump is very much a Teddy Roosevelt Republican, and in that he believes that tariffs are a necessary tool to protect America and American workers. We just saw what happened recently with Mexico and Canada. Joining me now, somebody who knows a lot more about this than I do, John Carney, Breitbart News finance and economics editor. John, I might as well just hand you the show for about the next hour and let you dance with glee over the tariff situation with Mexico and Canada. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, so Donald Trump has a much broader view of tariffs than we've seen from the Republican Party for quite a while. As you said, this is historically the Republican Party's position. It was more or less founded as a tariff party. Lincoln was a big believer in tariffs, but so was William McKinley, who is somebody who Donald Trump brings up all the time. He basically set the stage for Republican dominance of American politics for the next 40 years. What happened most recently was Donald Trump said to Mexico and Canada that we need help on the border. We can't do it alone. We need our neighbors to the south and the north to help us with preventing illegal drugs from coming over, help us from preventing illegal aliens from coming over. And what he said was, look, if you guys get your act together, help us out, we will not tariff you. If you won't do that, you're going to face a really high tariff, 25%. And it'll climb from there if you can't bring yourself around to cooperating with us on border security. Now, a lot of people really hoped, a lot of people on the left, even some people on the right, really hoped that these countries would somehow resist this, that they would say to Donald Trump, no, we're not going to do it. We're going to, take your tariff and we'll tariff you back. That's not what happened. What happened was Donald Trump said, well, we're going to tariff you. And they said, no, don't do that. We'll give you help on the border. We're sending troops to the border. Mexico called first, said, we'll send 10,000 troops to the border. We'll help you out. Then Canada called up and said, us too. We'll send 10,000 troops to the border. We will help you on the border. Now, Donald Trump didn't say that this is good enough. He said, we'll pause the tariffs for 30 days, see what you guys do, see what kind of help you're really providing. If you just, if you send troops there and they don't do anything, if you don't actually stop fentanyl from coming in, if you don't really help us, the tariffs will come back. So the threat didn't go away. But he did say, we'll see whether you're willing to cooperate. And I think they will be, because frankly, drug smuggling and human trafficking isn't good for Mexico. It's not good for Canada. Neither of them have an interest in preserving what was happening under the Biden administration. So I think we're actually probably going to escape this with very little tariffs on either Mexico or Canada, at least for the time being, because it's in their interest to cooperate with us on this.
Okay, let's set the immigration thing aside, because this begs the question, John, and maybe you have some insight here. As you pointed out, he didn't really stop them. He paused them for a month. Well, we'll pause them for a month and see if you're on your best behavior. The question is, as a lover of McKinley and Roosevelt, as Trump is, as you pointed out, does he want to tariff them anyway? Meaning, is this coming? Is he going to find a reason? Is it going to be a month from now and he's going to say, Mexico, you're a bunch of dirty liars. Tariffs are coming your way. Does he want to tariff? And if so, why would he?
So I don't think he actually does want to tariff Mexico and Canada. Donald Trump would actually love to have Mexico be a prosperous nation that is a good neighbor to the U.S. Mexican prosperity will actually benefit the U.S. because we'll have fewer people wanting to come into the U.S. from our southern border. Canada's the same thing. He wants Canada to be prosperous. I mean, he wants them to be the 51st state. He doesn't want them to, suffer economically. I think what he's really doing with the message to Canada and to Mexico is sending the world a message, which is that the time in which they were able to take advantage of unfair trade practices is over, and that they are going to have to make sure that they are complying with U.S. demands on a whole host of issues, or they will face tariffs. A lot of this, I think, frankly, is aimed at China. China is the place that is actually the major threat economically to U.S. manufacturing, to the U.S. economic security. So I think what we're seeing here is a demonstration of the power of tariffs, a gathering up of our forces, in fact, you know, saying, everybody, let's get together and cooperate economically so that we can stop the real monster on the world stage, which is China.
Okay, so John, I want to pause for a moment on all this because I don't want to talk past everyone or talk over people's heads. What are these, as it pertains to China, Mexico, Canada, what are these unfair trade practices you're talking about? We just assume everybody knows, but most people don't with this macroeconomic talk. What are they? What's unfair?
Right, well, so one of the main things China does to the rest of the world is they promise a huge market. Remember, China is, you know, one of the most populous countries in the entire world. And they say, if you want to sell stuff to Chinese people, you have to do your manufacturing here. And they say, if you do your manufacturing elsewhere, we will put up both tariff barriers and non-tariff barriers to keep you from being able to sell your stuff in China. So what does that mean? Well, if the U.S. doesn't say the same thing, then manufacturing gets moved to China because you have one person that says, yeah, you can sell us stuff from China. And China says, well, you can't sell us stuff from abroad. So then manufacturing moves to China. That is the core of the unfair trade practices that China deploys and has deployed for 25 years now, ever since they came into the WTO, to move manufacturing from all over the world into China. Donald Trump thinks that this should end. He's right. And he is going to, I think, very quickly move to try to stop this from happening, to move manufacturing out of China. That doesn't mean it all comes to the U.S., by the way. I think Donald Trump would be very happy to see a diversity of manufacturing. We do want manufacturing here in the U.S., that's true. But we don't, what we really want is not to be dependent on one country run by communist maniacs who don't like the U.S. way of life. We can't allow our country and our economy to be dependent on the goodwill of Xi Jinping and his communist rogue regime. So we're going to say, no more. No more of this. We're going to move stuff out of China, some of it into the U.S., but frankly, some of it into allied countries. If, you know, if manufacturing moves out of China and moves to elsewhere in the world, whether it's India or Vietnam, that's better than it just staying in China.
John, China, unlike Canada and Mexico, did not back off. They were given a 10% tariff threat from Trump, and they thumbed their nose right back at us. So going forward here, people who are already squeezed by inflation, just watching their buying power disappear, people are apprehensive, I should say. What are we looking at with the potential trade war here?
So I think the tariffs will go much higher with China. What I began by saying was what we were asking from Canada and Mexico is easy for them to give, right? Help us on the border, easy, in their interest. What we are going to do to China is not easy for China to accept, is not in their interest. We are actually saying, we don't like your economic plan. We don't like your economic system. And frankly, I don't think they're going to change. I think the way this ends up in the end is a separation, that we are no longer going, that countries of the free world will no longer be doing business with China 10 years from now. I think it will take a while, but we are going to move just like we did to the Soviet Union. We were not, you know, we did not depend on the Soviet Union for anything. We actually had a pretty severe economic embargo on doing stuff with Russia, the Soviet Union. I think that's where this ends up with China, that we are going to end up, the phrase everybody uses is decoupling. Our economy over the last 25 years has become deeply integrated with China. We are in the process of deintegrating ourselves with the Chinese economy.
But are we, just real quick as we wrap this up here, are we in a position strong enough now to decouple the world from China too. They really have really gained on us when it comes to influence internationally. Can we do that? Do we still have what it takes to do what you just said?
Yeah, I do think we can. And I think that it will end up benefiting the US definitely, but the rest of the world has begun to figure out that what they did to US manufacturing, they're gonna do to French manufacturing, they're going to do to German manufacturing, that it is not just the US versus China here, it's actually the rest of the world, at least the rest of the developed world versus China. That does probably mean that we have to do more outreach around the globe, because China is trying to get everywhere that isn't the US on its side. We'll have to push back against that. But I think we can do it, and I think we will, and I think it'll be really good for the ordinary people of the United States, of Germany, of France. It won't be good for the elites of these countries. They've done very well with financializing their economy and moving manufacturing over to China. It will be good for the ordinary people of all of the rest of the world, rather than just the financial elites.
Thank you, John. Go back soon, my brother. All right. It's time for Light in the Mood. Next. All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And you know how I could tell I was getting older and more like my father? Is I'm getting more and more frustrated when people I deal with don't speak and understand English. You've heard me rant about this before in the past, and I know it makes me sound like an old curmudgeon with gray in my beard, which of course I am now, but I can't freaking stand it. And I'm just really grateful to have my president again.
Go ahead.
As I expectation from you, do you have any plan to change Afghanistan situation? Are you able to recognize Taliban? Because I'm an Afghan journalist, Afghan suffered woman. Any comment about Afghanistan? What's your future plan for Afghan people, especially Afghan?
I have a little hard time understanding you. Where are you from?
Afghanistan.
Oh. Actually, it's a beautiful voice and a beautiful accent. The only problem is I can't understand a word you're saying. But I just say this. Good luck. Live in peace. Go ahead, please. That's okay. Yeah, please.
Anyway, best of luck to you. I'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty on Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.